telling me some story or other. It surprised me that I felt her absence personally. I missed her as I would a fond companion, but I fretted for her too. Mother had already taken her cane to Hetty once. Finding no trace of her in the house, I stood on the top step by the back door, scanning the workyard. A thin haze had drifted in from the harbor, and overhead the sun glinted through it with the dull gold of a pocket watch. Snow was in the door of the carriage house, repairing one of the breeching straps. Aunt Sister straddled a stool by the vegetable garden, scaling fish. Not wishing to rouse her suspicions, I ambled to the porch of the kitchen house where Tomfrey was handing out supplies. Soap to Eli for washing the marble steps, 2 Osnaburg towels to Phoebe for cleaning Crystal, 1 coal scoop to Sabi for resupplying the scuttles. As I waited for him to finish, I let my eyes drift to the oak in the back left corner. Its branches were adorned with tight buds, and though the tree bore little resemblance to its summer visage, the memory of that long-ago day returned. Sitting straddle-legged on the ground, the hot stillness, the green-skinned shade, arranging my words with marbles. Sarah, go. I looked away to the opposite side of the yard, and it was there I saw Hetty's mother, Charlotte, walking beside the woodpile, bending now and then to pick up something from the ground. Arriving behind her unseen, I noticed the tidbits she scavenged were small downy feathers.
Charlotte?
She jumped, and the feather between her fingers fluttered off on the sea wind. It flitted to the top of the high brick wall that enclosed the yard, snagging in the creeping fig.
Miss Sarah, she said, you scared the jiminies out of me.
Her laugh was high-pitched and fragile with nerves. Her eyes darted toward the stable.
I didn't mean to startle you. I only wondered, do you know where...
She cut me off and pointed into the woodpile.
Look way down on there.
Peering into a berth between 2 pieces of wood, I came face to face with a pointy-eared brown creature covered with fuzz. Only slightly bigger than a hen's chick, it was an owl of some sort. I drew back as its yellow eyes blinked and bore into me. Charlotte laughed again, this time more naturally.
It ain't gonna bite.
It's a baby.
I came on it a few nights back, poor thing on the ground, crying.
Was it hurt?
No, just left behind is all. Its mama's a barn owl, took up in a crow's nest in the shed, but she left. I'm afraid something got her. I've been feeding the baby scraps.
My only liaisons with Charlotte had been dress fittings, but I'd always detected a keenness in her. Of all the slaves father owned, she struck me as the most intelligent, and perhaps the most dangerous, which would turn out to be true enough.
I'll be kind to Hetty, I said abruptly.
The words, remorseful and lordly, came out as if some pustule of guilt had disgorged. Her eyes flashed open, then narrowed into small burrs. They were honey-colored, the same as Hetty's.
I never meant to own her. I tried to free her, but I wasn't allowed.
I couldn't seem to stop myself. Charlotte slid her hand into her apron pocket, and silence swelled unbearably. She'd seen my guilt, and she used it with cunning.
That's all right, she said. 'Cause I know you gon' make that up to her one of these days.
The letter M clamped onto my tongue with its little jaws.
Make it up?
I mean, I know you gon' help her any way you can to get free.
Yes, I'll try, I said.
What I need is you swearing to it.
I nodded, hardly understanding that I'd been deftly guided into a covenant.
You keep your word, she said. I know you will.
Remembering why I'd approached her in the first place, I said, I've been unable to find...
Handful gonna be at your door for you know it.
Walking back to the house, I felt the noose of that strange and intimate exchange pull into a knot. Hetty appeared in my room 10 minutes later, her eyes dominating her small face, fierce as the little owl's. Seated at my desk, I'd only just opened a book I'd borrowed from Father's library, The Adventures of Telemachus. Telemachus, the son of Penelope and Odysseus, was setting out to Troy to find his father. Without questioning her earlier whereabouts, I began to read aloud. Hetty plopped onto the bed steps that led to the mattress, rested her chin in the cup of her hands, and listened through the morning as Telemachus took on the hostilities of the ancient world. Wily Charlotte. As March passed, I thought obsessively about the promise she'd wrung from me. Why hadn't I told her Hetty's freedom was impossible? That the most I could ever offer her was kindness? When it came time to sew my Easter dress, I cringed to think of seeing her again, petrified she would bring up our conversation by the woodpile. I would rather have impaled myself with a needle than endured more of her scrutiny. I don't need a new dress this Easter, I told Mother. A week later, I stood on the fitting box, wearing a half-sewn satin dress. On entering my room, Charlotte had hastened Hetty off on some contrived mission before I could think of a way to override her. The dress was a light shade of cinnamon, remarkably similar to the tone of Charlotte's skin, a likeness I noted as she stood before me with 3 straight pins wedged between her lips. When she spoke, I smelled coffee beans and knew she'd been chewing them. Her words squeezed out around the pins in twisted curls of sounds.
You gon' keep that word you gave me?
To my disgrace, I used my impediment to my advantage, struggling more than necessary to answer her, pretending the words fell back into the dark shoot of my throat and disappeared.
Handful. On the first good Saturday, when it looked like spring was staying put this time, Mrs. took Miss Sarah, Miss Mary, and Miss Anna off in the carriage with the lanterns on it. Aunt and sister said they were going to White Point, to promenade. Said all the women and girls would be out with their parasols. When Snow drove the carriage out the back gate, Miss Sarah waved, and Sobby, who was dandied up in a green frock coat and livery vest, was hanging off the back, grinning. Aunt sister said to us, What y'all looking at? Get to work cleaning, a full spit and shine on their rooms. Make hay while the mice away. Up in Miss Sarah's room, I spread the bed and scrubbed the gloom on the looking glass that wouldn't come off with any kind of ash water. I swept up dead moths, fat from gnawing on the curtains, wiped down the privy pot, and threw in a pinch of soda. I scrubbed the floors with lime soap from the demijohn. Wore out from all that, I did what we called shilly-shally, poking around up to no good. First, I looked to see was any slave in the passageway. Some of them would as soon tell on you as blink. I shut the door and opened Miss Sarah's books. I sat at her desk and turned one page after another, staring at what looked like bits and pieces of black lace laid across the paper. The marks had a beauty to them, but I didn't see how they could do anything but comfuddle a person. I pulled out the desk drawer and rooted all through her things. I found a piece of unfinished cross stitch with clumsy stitches. Looked like a 3-year-old had done it. There were some fine glossy threads in the drawer wrapped on wood spools. Sealing wax, tan paper, little drawings with ink smudges, a long brass key with a tassel on it. I went through the wardrobe. touching the frocks Mama'd made. I nosed through the dresser table drawer, pulling out jewelry, hair ribbons, paper fans, bottles and brushes, and finally, a little box. It glistened dark like my skin when it was wet. I pushed up the latch. Inside was a big silver button. I touched it, then closed the lid the same slow way I'd closed her wardrobe, her drawers, and her books. With my chest filling up, there was so much in the world to be had and not had. I went back and opened up the desk drawer one more time and stared at the threads. What I did next was wrong, but I didn't much care. I took the plump spool of scarlet thread and dropped it in my dress pocket. The Saturday before Easter, we all got sent to the dining room. Tomfrey said things had gone missing in the house. I went in there thinking, Lord help me. There wasn't nothing worse for us than some little old piece of nonsense disappearing. One dent up tin cup in the pantry, or a toast crumb off Mrs. plate and the feathers flew. But this time, it wasn't a piece of nonsense, and it wasn't scarlet thread. It was Mrs. brand new bolt of green silk cloth. There we were, 14 of us, lined up while Mrs. carried on about it. She said the silk was special, how it traveled from the other side of the world, how these worms in China had spun the threads. Back then, I'd never heard such craziness in my life. Every one of us was sweating and twitching, running our hands in our breeches pockets or up under our aprons. I could smell the odors off our bodies, which was nothing but fear. Mama knew everything happening out there over the wall. Mrs. gave her passes to travel to the market by herself. She tried to keep the bad parts from me, but I knew about the torture house on Magazine Street. The white folks called it the workhouse, like the slaves were in there sewing clothes and making bricks and hammering horseshoes. I knew about it before I was 8. The dark hole they put you in and left you by yourself for weeks. I knew about the whippings. 20 lashes was the limit you could get. A white man could buy a bout of floggings for $0.50 and use them whenever he needed to put some slave in the right frame of mind. Far as I knew, not one Grimke slave had gone to the workhouse. But that morning, every one of us in the dining room was wondering, is this the day? One of you is guilty of thieving. If you return the bolt of cloth, which is what God would have you do, then I will be forgiven. Mrs. didn't think we had a grain of sense. What were any of us going to do with emerald silk? The night after the cloth vanished, I slipped out, walked straight out the door. I had to pass by Cindy outside Mrs. door. She was no friend to Mama, and I had to be wary round her. But she was snoring away. I slid into bed next to Mama. Only she wasn't in bed this time. She was standing in the corner with her arms folded over her chest. She said, "What do you think you're doing?" I never had heard that tone to her voice. "Get up, we going back to the house right now. This the last time you sneaking out, the last time. This ain't no game, handful. There'd be misery to pay on this." She didn't wait for me to move, but snatched me up like I was a stray piece of batting, grabbed me under one arm, marched me down the carriage house steps, crossed the workyard. My feet didn't hardly touch the ground. She dragged me inside through the warming kitchen, the door nobody locked. Her finger rested against her lips, warning me to stay quiet. Then she tugged me to the staircase and nodded her head toward the top. "Go on now." Those stair steps made a racket. I didn't get 10 steps when I heard a door open down below and the air sucked from Mama's throat. Master's voice came out of the dark saying, "Who is it? Who is there?" Lamp light shot across the walls. Mama didn't move. "Charlotte," he said, calm as could be, "what are you doing in here?" Behind her back, Mama made a sign with her hand, waving at the floor. And I knew she meant me to crouch low on the steps. Nothing, Master Grimke, nothing, sir. There must be some reason for your presence in the house at this hour. You should explain yourself now to avoid any trouble. It was almost kind the way he said it. Mama stood there without a word. Master Grimke always did that to her. Say something. If it was Mrs. standing there, Mama could have spit out 3-4 things already. Say handful of sick and you're gonna see about her. Say Aunt Sister sent you in here to get some remedy for snow. Say you can't sleep for worrying about their Easter clothes, how they gonna fit in the morning. Say you're walking in your sleep. Just say something. Mama waited too long, 'cause here came Mrs. out from her room. Peering over the step, I could see she had her sleeping cap on crooked. I have knots in my ears that I can't undo, and this is one of the worst. The night I did wrong, and Mama got caught. I could have showed myself. I could have given the rightful account, said it was me, but what I did was ball up silent on the stair steps. Mrs. said, "Are you the pilferer, Charlotte? Have you come back for more? Is this how you do it, slipping in at night?" Mrs. roused Cindy and told her to fetch Aunt Sister and light 2 lamps. They were going to search Mama's room. "Yes'm, yes'm," said Cindy, pleased as a planter punch. Master Grimke groaned like he stepped in a dog pile. All this nasty business with women and slaves. He took his light and went back to bed. I followed after Mama and them from a distance, saying words a 10-year-old shouldn't know, but I'd learned plenty of cuss at the stables listening to Sobby sing to the horses. God damn me, God damn me, day and night. God damn me, all them whites. I was working myself up to tell Mrs. what happened. I left my place beside Miss Sarah's door and sneaked out to my old room. Mama brought me back to the house. When I peered round the door jamb into our room, I saw the blankets torn off the bed, the wash basin turned over, and our flannel gunny sack dumped upside down, quilt fillings everywhere. Aunt Sister was working the pulley to lower the quilt frame. It had a quilt top on it with raw edges, bright little threads fluttering. Nobody looked at me standing in the doorway, just Mama, whose eyes always went to me. Her lids sank shut, and she didn't open them back. The wheels on the pulley sang and the frame floated down to that squeaky music. There on top of the unfinished quilt was a bolt of bright green cloth. I looked at the cloth and thought, how pretty. Lamplight catching on every wrinkle. Me, Aunt Sister, and Mrs. stared at it like it was something we'd dreamed. Mrs. gave us an earful then about how hard it was for her to visit discipline on a slave she trusted. But what choice did she have? She told Mama, "I will delay your punishment until Monday. Tomorrow is Easter, and I do not want it marred by this. I will not send you off for punishment, and you should be grateful for that. But I assure you, your penalty will match your crime." She hadn't said workhouse. She'd said off, but we knew what off meant. At least Mama wasn't going there. When Mrs. finally turned to me, she didn't ask me what I was doing out here or send me back to Miss Sarah's floorboards. She said, "You may stay with your mother until her punishment on Monday. I wish her to have some consolation until then. I am not an unfeeling woman." Long into that night, I slobbered out my sorrow and guilt to Mama. She rubbed my shoulders and told me she wasn't mad. She said I never should have snuck out of the house, but she wasn't mad. I was about asleep when she said I should have sewed that green silk inside a quilt and she never would have found it. I ain't sorry for stealing it, just for getting caught. "How come you took it?" "'Cause," she said, "'cause I could." Those words stuck with me. Mama didn't want that cloth. She just wanted to make some trouble. She couldn't get free, and she couldn't pop Mrs. on the back of her head with a cane, but she could take her silk. You do your rebellions any way you can.
Sarah. On Easter, we Grimkeys rode to St. Philip's Episcopal Church beneath the Pride of India trees that line both sides of Meeting Street. I'd asked for a spot in the open air sulky with Father, but Thomas and Frederick snared the privilege, while I was stuck in the carriage with Mother in the heat. The air oozed through slits that passed for windows, blowing in thinly peeled wisps. I pressed my face against the opening and watched the splendor of Charleston sweep by. Bright single houses with their capacious verandas,